Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Illustration Department Podcast. My name is Giuseppe Castellano. In this podcast, I talk to folks in illustration, graphic design, publishing, animation, and other creative fields about their work, the lessons they've learned, and the bumps and bruises they've experienced along the way. In this episode, my guest is Catherine Humphreys, art director at Harper's Magazine. The most important part of being an illustrator isn't style or meeting social media expectations. It is, as Katie explains, maintaining self-confidence. On one of the topics, Katie shares how she finds, keeps track of, and works with illustrators. She tells us why AI images are not gracing the pages of Harper's. And Katie and I discuss why another important part of being an illustrator is the use of color palettes that are unexpected. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
I went for a long run this morning and got super overheated. So I feel a little like I feel like my brain is there's a little bit of a delay, but if you're editing, that's
that's why I have a delay in my brain. Yeah, I did too. I went bike riding and it was a mistake.
It was a mistake this morning and I went early, but it was just too hot. It was too hot. And I got home and I was like, What have you done? Like this is not productive.
Like
on top of a big car today, but that's how it, you know.
Yeah. I know. I come back from it sweating, like completely soaked as if I'd just gone for a dip, check my phone and it's like warning, air quality, don't go outside, don't do anything active. I'm like, okay.
Yep.
Probably did more harm than good to the old bod today, but that's fine.
Same.
I noticed that you joined Twitter in August of 2011, which is around the same time I did. Your account is locked now, but it was a bit surprising to me that you only amassed 108 followers in all of that time.
I don't really use Twitter, to be honest with you.
I know, I noticed.
I don't use Twitter. I'm pretty active on Instagram. I think I find Twitter to be, it's not as strong of a platform for visuals. At times, it felt like more of a hostile space to me than Instagram, which felt like more of a supportive space for artists. Yeah. So it's also a time thing. You know, I think limiting myself to one social platform works for me with the amount of time I have to.
Yeah. I know, but even ADs who aren't active at all have like a few thousand followers just simply for being an AD of a major publishing house or magazine.
I mean, you have to ask the people who don't follow me why they don't.
They're all listening right now, so they're probably just like looking for you, but your account's locked, so it's
you can find me on Instagram.
Yeah, that's better. Yeah, I hate Twitter. You know, no, I don't. I don't hate Twitter. I think it's more accurate to say I feel anger for what it does to people, for how people behave on it. It rewards those who act as if they have an antisocial personality disorder.
I think I would tend to agree, and that's part of the reason that I haven't devoted any time to that space.
Is social media, specifically Instagram, a way for you to find artists?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Is it the way? I'm leaving.
No, it's definitely not the only way. I mean, I look at mailers still. I look at every email. I know not all ADs look at every email. I read every single one. I don't reply to most of them, but I do look at every single one.
Do you not reply because you're a big jerk, or is there some other reason?
It's really just a time management thing. I have a tiny department. I'm responsible not only for the illustration, but the photography, fine art, commissioning, art research. All of it for my department. So I look at the emails. If it's work that I feel like would be of interest to me in the future, I flag it and I keep moving, you know, but that allows me to look at everything. If I start a dialogue with someone, you know, it tends to slow down my ability to take care of other things.
Yeah. I was just telling an illustrator that earlier today. In fact, I said to them, if they get a response from an art director and it says something to the effect of, you know, hey, Catherine, thanks so much for this email. I really like your work and I'll keep your work in mind for future projects. That's not a brush off, because what you just said, like if you start a dialogue, then you're just going to be buried in emails all day long. You'll never be able to get to any of your work. So when an art director actually takes the time, which they don't have, to send you something like that, that's a win. Maybe it's a lowercase W win, but it's still a W.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think if I reply to you, if I take the time to send that kind of note, that's I'm keeping my eye on your work and yeah. I'm very interested.
How are you flagging things? What does flagging mean?
Well, I have a lot of different ways. I mean, I have various folders on Instagram. I use Pinterest a little bit still. Okay. You know, I have different folders in my email. I have lots of random screenshots and Dropbox folders. And, it's one of the biggest challenges. There's so much great work. Right. And your ability to organize it and sort of maintain a system in which you can remember where everything is really one of the biggest challenges of the job.
Are you in the office right now?
I am in the office right now.
Nice. You're taking the listeners into the Harper's offices. I like it. As luxurious as I'm sure it is. You have a corner office, windows. Yeah, 100%.
I do actually have a corner office.
Oh, hello.
It's not that luxurious, Stop. But it does have a nice view.
I had one once. It was nice. It was a nice view too. I had some really amazing plantage on my windowsill. I miss that office.
My plants are at least here, they're very neglected. I do better at home with that.
But. Spider plants, man. Spider plants. I'm telling you.
There you go.
They purify the air. Easy to take care of. And they grow their own baby plants, and then you can grow more spider plants.
Perfect.
There you go. How would you describe your job to someone who's never heard of an art director or Harper's?
Well, there are two parts to that. I think the position here at Harper's is really unique because as I said before, I manage not only illustration and photography commissions, but I also commission painters. And then I do, fine art research, and we publish a lot of existing work. The scope of the job here is really broad. I would say to someone who, is just unfamiliar with art direction in general, what we do here is sort of less design focused. Mm-hmm. It's more like content artwork focused. So right. Most of the magazine is sort of a template. It's a templated publication, much like the New Yorker. So there's not a lot of variation in terms of like the typography and the layouts outside of the size of the images and the placement of the artwork. So the core part of my job is determining what the artwork will be, the size it will run at, and then sort of facilitating that process, whatever it might be.
So you work with a lot of illustrators.
I do work with a lot of illustrators, and I think that was one of the things in coming to Harper's that was just such a gift for me coming from a photo background, was sort of entering this new space and learning and working with illustrators.
How many people are on your team who hire illustrators?
Two, including me.
And just as a reminder for everyone, Harper's is a monthly magazine. So you have one a month.
Yep.
By the way, a funny little aside, as I was doing research for this chat, Harper's Magazine, and I am not ashamed to admit this, because I have been wrong in the past on many things, and I feel good about just accepting the fact that I'm hardly ever right on anything. No, I'm kidding. Growth, maturity, good mental space, is that Harper's and Harper's Weekly should not be confused because they are not the same.
No, so Harper's Magazine, Harper's Monthly Magazine, which is what we are, Harper's Weekly, Harper's Bazaar, all of those publications were owned by the same four brothers in the 19th century.
Right.
And then over the years, divided up and were owned by different entities from then on.
They formed Harper and Row, which a lot of folks listening will recognize. Ursula Nordstrom, one of the great children's book editors of all time, worked at Harper and Row, Marie Sendak. Yep. All the greats, Shel Silverstein, those guys. So that's tied to this.
Yes.
Another funny little thing that I learned was Harper was founded in 1850. It is the oldest continuously published monthly magazine in the United States.
Yes. What that means is that we've never missed an issue since 1850.
Ah, but Scientific American just entered the chat, Catherine. They were founded in 1845, and they like to say that they are the oldest continuously published monthly magazine in the United States.
Are they a general interest publication? I guess that would be the qualifier.
I just butter knifed those stats. I didn't really take a deep, deep dive. Going back to illustrators, you look at something, you get an email, postcard, which is, by the way, it's coming up more and more, this whole mailers thing. For a while there, it looked like postcards were dead in the water, but it sounds as if they're not. How many do you get a week?
A few dozen.
Okay.
I think I would say my feedback for that would be, if you're going to do it, research who you're sending your work to. Make sure the person you're sending it to is appropriate for the type of work that you do.
Okay.
And try to do something that's going to stand out, that's unique. Choose an interesting paper stock, have an unusual size. I would spend more money on the mailer and send it to less people. Because I do get, some of them I just think, wow, this really doesn't, it might be kind of like fashion illustration type stuff.
Right.
Maybe they're confused about which Harper's I work for. but I do get things that really aren't a great fit for what we do here. Right. I find it unfortunate. Someone took time and sent money, to send it to me, and it's, it's sort of a waste.
And also to do a good piece of art on it.
Yes. Yes. And sometimes less is more.
Yeah.
Choose something really outstanding, have a single image. I definitely go to people's websites or their Instagram accounts when I receive a mailer that's compelling. So, if you have something, if you have a striking piece on your mailer there, art directors will pursue it from there.
Right. It sounds as if you guys are either, are you full on site or hybrid?
We are full on site.
Since when?
Since late 2020.
Wow.
Yes.
For a minute, I was worried you were going to say March 2020, but then you said late 2020, and it kind of is worse.
Yeah, we're a really small office, and the publisher feels strongly that it's important that we're able to communicate in person.
Okay.
And they took a lot of measures to ensure that people were safe, and so we all came back to work.
Yeah, put on your hazmat suits.
Yes. Yes. There were some interesting outfits around the office that first 6 months we were back.
I can imagine. Do you and your very small team use AI for your illustration needs?
It's an interesting question. No, not at all for illustration. I did just publish a photographic work that's AI based, but it was created by a photographer who has long been, a fine art and editorial photographer who just published a book using AI. So that particular use was sort of outside of the scope of what I think most people would consider an AI, illustration or photograph or AI generated artwork. The general policy is no. That piece was also it was also created for an article that was about AI. So, seemed suitable in that context.
Why not? Why not use AI?
It's a good question. I don't know that I've formulated my answer to the AI question yet, to be quite honest with you. Okay. I come from a photography background. What I know about the history of photography in the 19th century is that because there was a tool involved and because it was scientific, it wasn't considered a fine art form, for 50 years, maybe closer to a century. So I do view these kinds of technologies as tools. I think there are a lot of ethical questions about the source images and how things are formulated and, how much input people have through the prompts they're using. So I think a lot remains to be seen with what the potential is with it. Do I think at the base level, I will use AI to create an illustration related to, the presidential election this year? No. The answer to that is no.
This podcast is produced by the Illustration Department, a global leader in online education for illustrators. Visit illustrationdept.com for class offerings like mentorships and portfolio reviews, testimonials, the Alumni Showcase, the podcast show notes, our Substack, our forum, and more. That's illustrationdept.com. And now back to our conversation. Yeah, I talk a lot about this on the podcast, and I'm sorry for anyone who's just like, oh my God, dude, all right, enough already. But I will not shut up about it. And there are some people out there who are in that weird camp of telling illustrators or people who are anti-AI to, quote, shut up about it. And I just, as an illustrator, as a illustrator instructor, mentor, whatever, advocate, art illustration history nerd, my position is very clear, and I just don't see it. Maybe you can help me like expand my position. That would be lovely. I'd love to like learn more about this and hear more opinions on this. But my position thus far, and I've spoken to a bunch of art directors who basically say the same thing, it's beyond just the technology of it. We're not being Luddites here. We're not saying, oh no, the car is going to replace the horse and buggy. We are literally saying this technology is copyright infringement. It is stealing. It exists purely based off of the artwork of humans. It's literally stealing art and then creating this art. And then the people who are using it are saying, look what I made. You didn't make a damn thing. So that's where I come from on this. And you're saying you haven't quite landed on how you're feeling about it. Help me understand why.
I think what I said was that I understand the ethical problems with it, and I do.
Yeah.
But you know, are there applications for it in the same way that there are applications for collage artists, for example, who use images regularly that are fair use?
Right.
You know, if you're taking something that already existed and making something new out of it, then you get into fair use law. And, you know, I'm not saying, you know, I want to be very clear here. I'm not saying, you know, the policy here at Harper's right now, by and large, is no. And it will remain that way.
Yeah.
You know, I like working with artists. As you can probably see, anyone who looks at the magazine, I hire a lot of painters. You know, I'm into like handwork, you know, and the process is a big part of it for me. And I like working with artists through that process.
Right.
You know, I think all I'm saying with AI is, you know, for me in this moment, I'm waiting to see you know, how this shakes out and what the potential uses are for it that maybe aren't problematic.
I would love for that to be the case. You know, I'd love for people to use AI to cure cancer. That'd be great. Medicinally, I think AI would make a ton of sense, but everywhere else, for me, it's all like, there's this commercial I saw the other day where it's like, use AI to chat with your coworkers. I'm like, what the fuck? Why can't you just like literally text your coworker, hey man, did you do the thing that was due at 3 o'clock? Like, why do I need AI to do that? Or can I just get up and go talk to that person at their office or in their cubicle? You know what I'm saying? Like, can we not just use AI for every darn thing?
Well, I mean, to loop back to something we discussed earlier, one thing I would love to see, you know, what the potential would be with AI for would be just organizing all of the illustrators I'm interested in working with, you know, helping me to categorize their work, you know, and seeing areas where they, you know, might cross over into different arenas. You know, that's a hard thing for me to keep up with,
right.
You know, so there's a lot of potential for that, for it there, definitely.
Wow. If that existed. There are some agents who are listening to this. I wonder, are they sweating all of a sudden?
Well, no, I don't think so. Because even, you know, I have wonderful relationships with a lot of agents. And we work closely with a lot of agencies and regularly with them. And that's a different kind of thing. That's someone who's familiar with your publication, who knows the type of artwork that you publish, who brings a new artist on and sends you a personalized note and says, hey, Katie, I know you guys publish fiction every month, and I really feel like this artist might be a good fit for this type of fiction.
Right.
That requires the agent, you know, that sort of personal connection.
Plus, you need an agent for a lot of other things, you know, contract negotiation and, you know, business strategy, and there's a lot of other things that agents do. Hi, agents. I love you guys.
I often say that to students, you know, please get an agent. You know, if you can get an agent early on, I think it's really beneficial.
Do you feel comfortable sharing a few names, or is that secret sauce? It's okay.
Well, I mean, I work regularly with Heart Agency.
Love them.
Illustration Zone. Dutch Uncle, Central Illustration.
Okay.
Illustration Division. Pekka is another one.
Asian Pekka, yeah.
Yep.
Speaking of students, you've been teaching at SVA now for more than 10 years, right?
I have.
I didn't mean for this whole conversation to be AI-based, but whatever. Has, like, the AI thing, the AI specter, the AI whatever, made its way into conversations with students? Like, are students saying things about, are they using it? Or are they saying to you, you know, raising their hand, hi, Ms. Humphreys, can we talk about AI? Because I'm scared of it. I mean, is there anything going on that front?
Well, I hope my answer doesn't disappoint you. I teach in the art history department and I teach photo history. So I'm mostly working on the opposite end of the spectrum with, you know, teaching them about things like ambrotypes and collodion, you know, glass plate processes and the history of the medium from that perspective. So it's not a conversation that comes up a lot in the context of what I teach. Although I'm sure it does in other courses.
Right. I would imagine it would at some point, right? I mean, I can only speak to two and four and from the illustration standpoint. I mean, AI doesn't do really great when it comes to reality. It's a faux reality. When it comes to like the approaches to photography, and I don't pretend to, I'm out of my depth here, but you know, there are things that you have to keep in mind as a photographer: composition, value range, focal points. I mean, all of that stuff that illustrators also have to think about. I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of a photographer, thinking about what AI can and can't do on the photography front.
Well, I mean, I think it really depends on who the photographer is and what the type of work that they make is. You know, it's 25 years ago when there was kind of a mass transition to digital photography. There was a tremendous amount of concern on the part of like certain types of documentary photographers or fine art photographers, and those concerns for certain photographers whose practice is really connected to film, beyond the fact that some films were discontinued just because the demand wasn't there for them.
Right.
You know, have largely proved to be false in certain ways. You know, if you work with an 8x10 camera and that's part of your practice, and you know, you work in the dark room or color film or, you know, whatever you're doing, if that's an essential part of creating the work that you make, you know, then these things to a degree aren't a concern of yours, you know, because what you're doing exists, you're in sort of a different arena than the AI space anyway.
Yeah. Just to put a little bit of a pin on this whole, like, is AI copyright infringement thing, tying it to the photography chit chat here. I think maybe the most famous case of using a photographer's work and creating something from it in like the most blatant way, most obvious way, would be the Shepard Fairey Obama Hope poster. His poster was pretty close to the photograph, and he won ultimately the lawsuit. Shepard did, but like I'm thinking of one of my, you know, my favorite collage artists, like Steven Kroniger, who's a podcast guest and super duper guy, you know, rips up some photographs, and I don't know if they're public domain or not, but he rips them up, creates something out of them that is entirely his own. And I think the big difference here with AI is that there's nothing behind it. There's no understanding as to why something works or as to, you know, what this particular image maker's position is on any given viewpoint, or nothing from them really exists in the piece. You know, a person on this side of the planet could put in the same prompt as a person on the other side of the planet and get basically the same result.
Well, but I think that's why art holds its value.
Well said.
Yeah, I mean, we're all you know, understandably concerned about this or curious, you know, about where it will lead. But, you know, ultimately, I find it less threatening, I think, than most people.
I'm with you on that. Apparently, some of us who are pushing back on it are quote unquote whining. I've heard that. We're whining about it. Stop whining. Shut up. Just do your thing.
That's a healthy response. You know, it's important to vocalize it. You know, but I think I would also say, you know, to artists, just keep doing what you do.
I agree.
Make the work that you make. You know, stay focused on building the connections that you would like to make. with our directors or publishers or, you know, whichever clients you're most interested in working with. And, you know, if you're focused on those things, then the AI part of it, I think, you know, becomes less significant.
Hear, hear. I'm sort of feel like I'm jumping a little bit. It's just, you know, every time you have a conversation with someone that you've never talked to before, right? This is something that I've experienced as a podcaster over the past 5 years and 250 plus episodes. You never quite, you don't know what you're going to get. You know, if it's somebody that I've spoken to before, then obviously you do. But like, for example, this conversation, right? There's just styles of discourse. There's styles of conversation per person. Everyone speaks differently. They converse differently. They process what you're saying differently and then respond differently. And with you, I'm feeling we're kind of going like here and then there and then back over there and back over here. It's not as linear as some other chats that I've had. And maybe that's my fault. Maybe I'm just being a terrible host today. I don't know.
I probably don't. I'm not a very linear thinker. So I think that's fair.
Yeah, it's coming across. You're not linear.
And I think I'm not linear. And here at the magazine, I'm kind of all over, you know, this morning, it's like I was communicating with a photo gallery, working with an illustrator, trying to find a painting for a section of the magazine, you know, so I move between different spaces, like visual spaces, you know, within short order here throughout my day. And so maybe I'm bringing a little bit of that to our conversation.
You're imbuing it with your non-linearness. What's the opposite of linear? Not random. Non-linear? That's a letdown. I don't like that. There's got to be a better word.
I'm an editor, I'm sure.
All right, so let's keep jumping. Let's not be linear here today. Back to illustration. When you get an email or a postcard or, you know, come across something on Instagram, what catches your attention? For sake of time, let's just do one and one. Like, what would be maybe not the thing, but a thing that catches your attention? First, let's start we'll start negative and then we'll go positive. What's a negative thing that catches your attention? Like, you see something, postcard or an email, and you're like, eh. No. Why the no? What's one reason why you pass?
It doesn't feel authentic. It feels like it's a style that I've seen before that's maybe become really popular recently. Okay. Like they're replicating something that someone else is known for. That's usually a no.
What's a yes? What catches your attention? Like, ooh.
I mean, that's hard. That's really difficult to articulate. You know, I think something that,
you know, it when you see it,
you know, it when you see, you definitely know when you see it, something that feels original. Palette's very important to me.
How so?
I like an unexpected palette, you know, and I think, artists who do that will catch my eye, for better or worse.
I'm so glad you said unexpected. Catherine, I'm calling you Catherine because I just don't know you well enough to call you Catherine.
That's okay. You can call me Katie.
All right. Leveled up just now. Sweet. Yeah. All right, Katie. So I'm so happy that you said unexpected. I'm serious because I that's how I describe palettes to illustrators when we talk about color theory and how you can use color to sort of manipulate mood and composition and things. I describe it that way. I say, you know, expected palette versus unexpected palette. So thank you for saying that, because then people are hearing that and going like, oh shit, he actually does know what he's talking about.
Yeah, no, I, you know, that's really appealing to me. Unusual perspectives are really appealing to me. You know, people who, if I'm looking like at other publications, and this involves the art director too, but I like illustrators, who are doing things that can be maybe more conceptual or less literal in terms of you know,
right,
what they're pulling out of whatever narrative or article that they're illustrating.
Right. Yeah. So it's like if you need an illustration of a I don't know, someone who's ill, mentally ill, let's say. I mean, it could work where like you just literally see a person looking like they're having a tough time of it mentally, like just a representational straight down the middle, or it can be something that's more shape based and more how it feels to have a mental illness. and not necessarily just showing a human feeling depressed or having anxiety or something along those lines.
I think that's, you know, that's sort of the first part of the process here is we read the copy that comes in and we think about, okay, if it's illustration, let's assume it's illustration, not photography or film art. Then the question becomes like, do we want to illustrate this like in a conceptual way? You know, is it narrative? Is it graphic? Right. Is it emotional? You know, and then a lot of questions, you know, depending upon which of those things or which combination of those things we're working with, then it becomes, you know, how best do we do that? You know, what is the style that lends itself, you know, to a result that communicates that?
What is it about illustration that, I mean, if I answered this question, I'd be here all day long. Like, I just love the storytelling. I love the emotional conveyance.
With photography, it has to either exist in the world or you have to create it in the world, right?
Right.
To a degree. With illustration, it doesn't have to exist. So, you know, that was a new experience for me in working with illustrators.
Illustration is the best.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
For illustrators listening who want to get into the editorial space, who want to submit an email to you, a postcard, follow you on Instagram, etc., what would be one piece of advice or little, you know, word of encouragement or something that you would want to say to them directly?
I would say the hardest part about being an artist is maintaining self-confidence. It's also the most important part of being a working artist. And I would just encourage them to, you know, continue to have that confidence and continue to reach out to people. You know, I have various artists who I have yet to work with, whose work I really love, who continue to reach out to me. And I do send them notes and say, hey, thank you for this reminder. You know, I'm continuing to keep my eye on your work and, you know, hopefully we'll work together soon. So I would just say, you know, be persistent.
Katie can be found on Instagram. If you find value in this podcast, please consider supporting it as a patron. Patrons receive perks, including a reusable 10% off discount code, access to dozens of patron-only episodes, invitations to our Art Directors After Hours series, and more. Become a patron by visiting patreon.com/illustrationdept. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.